The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you once again for listening. Today, we're tackling migraines and headache update with guest expert neurologist Dr. Maria Carmen Wilson of the USF College of Medicine. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And so first I'd like to say hello to my colleague, Dr. Wilson. Nice to have you here, Maria.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
And Dr. Maria Carmen Wilson is professor of neurology at the USF, that's University of South Florida, here in Tampa, Florida. She serves as the associate director of the neurology residency program, associate director for the pain medicine fellowship, director of the headache medicine fellowship, and medical director of the headache and pain center at Tampa General Hospital. Dr. Wilson earned her bachelor of science and medical degree at the University of Cadiz.
Mm-hmm.
Medical School in Cadiz, Spain, where she was born and raised. She has completed training in neurology, followed by a fellowship in pain medicine and headache at the University of South Florida College of Medicine. She holds a triple board certification in the fields of neurology, pain medicine, and headache medicine. A skilled educator, Dr. Wilson was a 1997 recipient of the Department of Neurology Teacher of the Year Award, the 2002 Distinguished Faculty Award, and in 2008, the Outstanding Headache and Pain Fellowship Teaching Award at USF. She's authored a book on the subject of headache, as well as numerous articles and several book chapters in the field of headache and pain. Dr. Wilson has conducted multiple clinical trials and is a national and international speaker. Carmen is an active member of several professional societies, including the American Headache Society, the International Headache Society, Academy of Neurology, the Spanish Pain Society, and the American Pain Society. She's on the board of directors of the American Headache Society and the American Council for Headache Education. And once again, it's great to have you here. And let's remind everybody there listening today to encourage you to call in with your questions. It could be not just about yourself, but also about a spouse, a loved one, a child, sibling, anybody at all that you're interested in finding out more about headaches, migraines, and the associated phenomena that occurs with these conditions. And the number to call us for these questions is 289-1860. That's 289-1860. That's in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, it's area code, toll-free, mind you, 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600. So let's begin, Carmen, with one of the basic questions, and that is, how do you define a headache? Let's start there.
Well, a headache basically is pain in the head. But okay. In my opinion, the most important distinction is to distinguish between primary headaches and secondary headaches.
Okay.
Secondary headaches are headaches that are due to a certain etiology. They have an identifiable cause. But primary headaches, which are the majority of headaches, do not have an attributable cause, and the problem is the headache per se.
Let's give an example, if you could.
Yes, as an example, tension-type headache is a primary headache. Migraine headache is also a great example of a primary headache. The reason is that migraine headache is associated with more disability than tension-type headache. In other words, if you have a tension-type headache, you can go about your business. I could have a tension-type headache and be here conducting this interview with you. But if I had a migraine, especially an acute severe migraine, I would be out of commission, and there is no way that I could be here having a conversation with you.
So a tension-type headache is one can function in spite of having that headache. And for those listeners out there that may very well frequently have had tension headaches but didn't realize that that's what they were called, would you give a brief description of a tension-type headache?
Absolutely. A tension-type headache is the typical pressure, vice-like, mild to moderate pain that is not associated with nausea, is not associated with vomiting. You can go about your business, and it's not associated with a lot of disability. And it's typically what we call holocephalic. The whole head is affected, okay, as opposed to a migraine headache, which could be either bilateral or unilateral, but is associated with nausea, sometimes vomiting, sensitivity to light, sensitivity to noise, sensitivity to smells, and it could be pulsatile and throbbing. And like I said, when moderate and severe, it's very incapacitating.
Okay. On the tension-type headache, the whole head can one think about a squeezing? You said a vice-like sensation. Is it is it frequently around the forehead? Can it be sometimes around the forehead?
Definitely. Well, it typically is. It can be either in the front, the sides, or all around the head.
Okay.
But the most important point is that it's not associated with that throbbing component, with that sensitivity to stimuli, and not associated with nausea. In fact, a very mild form of migraine can be very much like a tension-type headache. And this is what happens when people evolve from having acute episodic attacks of migraine into a chronic migraine type of state. Then the whole attack that I described, that is pulsatile, nausea, vomiting, photophobia, phonophobia, all of that is really replaced by a background of tension-type headache with intermittent escalations to the more severe migraine type headache, which is quasi migraine or a full blown migraine.
So what you're saying is that when you have such frequent migraines, then you develop a chronic tension like headache, which hardly ever goes away, upon which you can have superimposed additional migraine phenomena.
Absolutely. Okay. That's exactly what I'm saying. And this is why it's so important that we do these kinds of programs so people know what to look for so they don't evolve from the acute state and the intermittent attacks to the more chronic daily type of situation.
Now, so let's look first. Let's cover some of the things that maybe can trigger migraines. Can, of course, foods are and what we drink sometimes can trigger that. Let's, if you would, go over some of the things.
Yes, people that are migraineurs, that suffer with migraine, are born with a genetic predisposition to be vulnerable to internal triggers and external triggers. Some triggers we can do something about. We can make some lifestyle changes. For example, with food, a lot of times alcohol is a trigger for migraineurs. Sometimes chocolate can be a trigger, especially if it's a lot. Sometimes ripe cheese or ripe bananas and a lot, MSG, monosodium glutamate, certainly is a factor. A lot of the condiments and prepared foods that have the preservatives are also a problem. But sometimes it's more important the timing of exposure to those triggers. For example, since people that are migraineurs have that genetically
inherited predisposition,
then what happens is that migraineurs have to know when they're more vulnerable to the triggers. For example, as a woman, when you are in the premenstrual phase or menstruating, that may not be the time to exhaust yourself, stay up late, have a lot of wine, alcohol, and then to have an upsetting situation or lack of sleep, for example. The combination of triggers seems to be more of a factor.
That's interesting. So during the menstrual cycle, when you're actually menstruating or just a few days before, it increases your vulnerability for those people that have this genetic predisposition to have a migraine attack.
Definitely. Women that suffer with migraine are very likely to have migraines associated with their menses. And in that situation, they're typically more severe, they're longer lasting, they're more difficult to treat. And there is even a condition by which women exclusively have migraines with their menses, which we call catamenial migraines. For the majority of cases, there is a worsening around the time of menses. Sometimes there is also attacks around ovulation.
All right, so what can happen is then if it can begin around the menses, but then if it becomes long-lasting, then you wind up having just like another chronic migraine headache problem, and it doesn't relent.
Well, you bring up a very good point. Migraines, they get migraine. The more you have, the more susceptible you are to have another attack. So this is why I'm always looking for pain freedom, not just pain relief. Mm-hmm. I want my patients to tell me, well, when I took my medication, my pain went away completely. Because if the pain doesn't go away completely, that means your brain still sensitized, your brain still vulnerable, and an atmospheric pressure change happens, or you go into your menses, some event occurs, or you skip a meal, or you don't have enough sleep, and then there you go, you have another attack. And the more attacks you have, the more likely that you are to suffer further attacks.
How delicate this is. You skip a meal, or you have less sleep, or the change in atmospheric pressure. These things can all trigger.
They can, but interestingly, if you are in a cycle that you're having a lot of headaches, that's probably going to consistently precipitate an attack. Mm-hmm. But if you are in remission and you're having infrequent headaches, it may not have an effect.
Mm-hmm. Can electrolyte imbalance also trigger?
Definitely. Electrolyte imbalance can be a problem. And also hypoglycemia. Low sugar is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. How about some of the trace elements, the magnesiums, the zincs, the copper, those things?
Very, very important. Magnesium in particular is also a treatment that we use for both acute and preventive treatment of migraine, because magnesium is kind of a what we call a membrane stabilizer. It's a natural calcium channel blocker. It kind of quiets the hyperexcitable state of the migraine brain.
Wow, that's very interesting. Let's just go off on a little tangent here. So let's say you find a person, well, you can just check a serum magnesium, for example?
That's not helpful, because it is the concentration of intracellular magnesium that is low in patients with migraine. And that has been very formally and very scientifically studied and shown that people with migraine have low iron magnesium concentration levels, and they do respond to, in particular, IV magnesium.
So there's no way to test for the levels of magnesium in those patients.
Not really, but it is wise to add on magnesium as part of your protocol, and often we do that in our center.
And you mentioned IV magnesium. Is there a reason why that's particularly helpful over oral magnesium.
Yes, because intravenous magnesium has a zero absorption time and it gets to where it needs to go immediately. However, oral preparation of magnesiums have a barrier in the GI tract and don't get completely absorbed, and they don't have the same benefits as the magnesium sulfate formulation that has been studied for acute headaches. So we tend to use the oral preparations as an add-on for preventive medications, but we tend to use the magnesium sulfate intravenous for the acute attacks.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and as you can see, anything related to headaches and migraines, today's the time, now's the time to call in with your questions. Once again, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County, elsewhere, toll-free 877-969-8600. You're listening to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today is migraines and headaches. Be right back.
This is Hugh Hewitt for townhall.com. The Republican leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, has announced that there is a growing, if not yet unanimous, GOP opposition to passing the so-called banking reform bill now moving through the Senate. This is good news, and we encourage every Republican and every responsible Democrat in the Senate to slam the brakes on this runaway Congress. After the jam down that was health care reform, the country has lost confidence in this Congress, and especially in Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Barney Frank, and Chris Dodd, the four leaders of this latest massive rewrite of the nation's laws. The voters saw the Democrats thumb their noses at their concerns over health care, and now Reid and company are readying another party line push. It is time to just say no. When the people vote in November, the Democrats will know how little support they have, but for now it is up to Senate Republicans to stop the recklessness of the drunk on power Democrats. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Keep up with developments in this explosive election year with a subscription to Town Hall Magazine. Log on to townhallmagazine.com, townhallmagazine.com.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with a doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're tackling migraines and headaches with Dr. Maria Carmen Wilson of the USF College of Medicine. And Maria, you mentioned before about how in the woman, especially around the menses, the severity of the migraines can be especially so compared to other times. In fact, it may be so great that it lingers for the rest of the period. That suggests that there's some hormonal involvement with this disease. Could you expound on that?
Yeah, definitely. Migraine is equally common in boys and girls until the age of puberty. And after that, it becomes three times more common in women because of hormonal reasons. It turns out that in the brain, there are receptors for both estrogen and progesterone. And the brain of the migraineur is very sensitive to fluctuation of those levels. So we know that once a precipitous fall of estrogen occurs at the time of menstruation, the brain reacts to that and then reacts by the cascade of migraine, but all the sequence of events that occur in migraine because of the fluctuations in hormonal levels.
Would that suggest that after menopause, with the gradual depletion of estrogen and other hormones, that the incidence or the frequency of migraines in women would increase?
Actually, it does decrease.
It decreases.
It burns out because, natural menopause, then you don't have a lot of fluctuations in hormonal levels. And the brain reacts to the fluctuation.
Okay, so that's the key. It's not so much the absolute level, but the fluctuation, the change in the hormone level.
Absolutely. That's what it is. And that's the reason why women that suffer with migraine and get pregnant enjoy a holiday from the attack, especially after the first trimester when the hormonal levels are nice and steady, then they don't have migraines. But of course, I'm not sure that's a very good approach, but
right.
Certainly one that works.
It certainly works. So do you sometimes have to resort to birth control pills of some nature to control certain women's symptoms? Has it ever come to that?
The jury's out on that because we don't have very good predictors as to who is going to do well on the hormonal therapy. It's the rule of the third. A third of patients don't have any change when they're placed on oral contraceptives. A third will actually do better and a third would get worse. So overall, the proof is in the pudding. So we don't have predictors, but some women do better on the oral contraceptives. Some women do worse. But along those lines, sometimes for women that have a problem with menstrual migraines, we use the continuous oral contraceptives for like 3 months, and then we avoid the fluctuation, and they tend to do really well, at least for 3 months.
Okay, and on the line is Betsy. Betsy is a patient of Dr. Wilson's, and we'd like to welcome Betsy to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Betsy, again, we first would like to thank you for joining us on a Sunday. Although it's a rainy Sunday in Tampa, nevertheless, we appreciate your participation in our show today.
Oh, it's my honor and privilege to be with you.
And tell us about when, I assume you have a headache. If you have experience with a migraine headache?
Yes.
And how old are you now, and when did your migraine headaches begin?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to really answer how old I am now. But my migraines began about 10 years ago. Actually, I'll be 60 in July.
Okay. So when you began in your 50s, how did it begin, number one? And secondly, other people in your family have migraines? How did you know it was a migraine that you were experiencing?
I didn't know it was a migraine, and I didn't know what happened when I had my first migraine. And I just noticed that my head on the left side was pounding. I couldn't open my eyes. I didn't want anyone to talk to me, and I had violent nausea. And so I was in a Bible study class with a neurologist. I live in Crystal River, Florida.
Good timing, huh?
Yeah. So he diagnosed me in Bible study.
Yes. And all right, so he diagnosed you then. And did he give any recommendations for that acute setting with this bad migraine?
Yes, he put me on a migraine medication at the time.
Do you remember the name of it?
It was Maxalt.
Maxalt?
Yes.
Okay. And
go ahead. Since then, I have changed.
Okay, but you went to the pharmacy right away, and is that a pill you take or a?
It was at that time. It was a pill, yes. But I have different triggers for migraines, and just one pill is not enough to alleviate my problem. I get migraine from like barometric pressure, like today with the rain.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's interesting or what's complicating to me is I had my most severe migraine not last night, but the night before, and they're usually in the middle of the night, and I couldn't figure out what happened, and then obviously today it's raining. So I don't quite understand that. I also get migraines from food and alcohol sensitivity.
Any particular ones?
Well, I can't drink wine at all, especially red wine.
Okay.
Nuts. I found that nuts bother me. Some cheeses, and of course, my addictiveness to chocolate doesn't help at all.
And by the way, I mean, insert
very
something
depressing.
Here. Yes, and Maria, is all chocolates, even dark chocolate, a problem for migraineurs?
It's controversial because there's a theory that migraineurs crave chocolate because the good stuff in chocolate trying to regulate what's going on in the brain. With chocolate, the more pure, the less intrusive, if you will. The dark chocolate, would be better. But in particular, the one that seems to be worse, the one that's in the candy bars, because they have a lot of other things.
Sugar.
in addition to chocolate. But they have even done studies that they have infused pure cocoa via a nasogastric tube, and people have been unable to reproduce the migraine attacks.
Okay.
And probably the reason is the brain that is brewing a migraine and perhaps craving the chocolate that is more to be blamed than the chocolate per se. But there is this connection between chocolate and migraine. But then again, it may be the migraine brain more responsible than the chocolate.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. Okay, let's go back to Betsy. So you're mentioning a variety of different triggers. And so these are things you avoid completely?
Well, you can't avoid barometric pressure.
Sure.
You know, and then like the glare, sun glare. If I'm out on a boat and it's, you know, a very hot day, I've stopped doing that. I also have occipital nerve triggers from my neck. Flying on an airplane triggers a migraine. But, you know, the great thing about this is Dr. Wilson has been able to treat or give me preventive treatment. So when I'm going into situations which I know will cause a migraine, like flying, she has a protocol for me which will usually not allow me to have a migraine.
So that's wonderful.
I'm most thankful. Oh yeah.
Let's hear about that for our listeners, and if you would be able to share that with us, the protocol to avoid migraines when you know you're going to be confronted with a environment or a situation where it would otherwise promote that migraine. What do you do?
Okay, well, like for a barometric pressure migraine, I would start taking Diamox.
Diamox, okay.
Uh-huh, and which you prescribed for me. And then if that doesn't work, immediately on the onset of the migraine, I'll take a Trexamet.
Which one?
Trexamet.
It's called Trexamet.
All right, we'll go over, for our listeners, we'll go over each of these one by one. Trexamet. All right, keep going.
Okay, and then I'll put a Lidoderm patch on the left side of my forehead where the migraine is.
Okay.
And I'll take a Phenergan and an ice pack and lie down. Huh? That's for nausea.
Okay. All right, now, go ahead.
Depending on the severity of the onset, if I take a Vicodin immediately, that usually works best, but I remain very cautious about taking that, and sometimes I put that off, and it gets me in trouble.
Okay.
But if I follow what Dr. Wilson says, I can usually stay out of trouble.
Does this, Maria, does this, the Diamox, the Trexamet, and so forth, is that helpful for all types of triggers or just the ones, the atmospheric trigger?
The Diamox is typically used for the atmospheric pressure triggers and for altitudinal headaches.
Okay.
But the Trexamet is a combination of sumatriptan, which is a migraine-specific medication, and naproxen sodium, which is an anti-inflammatory. So that is a medication that really targets migraine mechanisms. The other one that Betsy mentioned before, Maxal, that's another triptan. That's another migraine-specific medication. And I'm glad we're talking about that because we have 7 triptans on the market, and they're all migraine-specific in that these are medications that don't work for foot pain. They're specifically for migraine.
Right. And the class of drug is called the triptans?
Yes, they're called the triptans.
T-R-Y-P-T-A-N?
T-R-I-P-T-A-N.
Okay.
Yeah, triptans.
Okay. And this is the class of drugs for migraines, and you were making a comment, there are seven of them?
Yeah, there is sumatriptan, and that's available commercially with the names of Imitrex, and it's part of Trexamet as well. Mm-hmm. There is rizatriptan, which is Maxalt. There is eletriptan, which is real Pax. There is amitriptan, which is Axer. There is frovatriptan, which is Frova. And there is also zolmitriptan, which is Zomig.
And these triptans are all given orally?
Some of them are available in the oral formulation and the rapid melt. And then two of them, sumatriptan, is available in a subcutaneous injection and subcutaneous needle-free injection and in nasal spray. And also zolmitriptan or Zomig is also available in nasal spray.
Wow. This whole field seems to have really mushroomed since I used to have migraines, 20, 30 years ago, and I would just take a Cafergot, which for me was very effective, which I don't think that's available anymore.
Well, Cafergot is also migraine-specific, but the most active ingredient in Cafergot is ergotamine, and ergotamine is not as clean and specific as the triptan, but it's also a vasoconstrictor and is very effective, but it's associated with nausea because it's not as selective, if you will. So while the triptans also help the nausea associated with the migraine, the ergotamine products typically have to be taken with an anti-nausea medication because they activate all the receptors that actually can worsen the nausea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
May I point out something? Dr.
Please.
Holt had mentioned all the various medicines.
Right.
What I found out that not all of my migraines are the same. So what works one time may not necessarily work another time. And I think this is what gives Dr. Wilson her extreme expertise on the knowledge of migraines, because she's versatile and she knows how to offer an alternative treatment for each different migraine, which I have.
Well, that's a very interesting issue. Now, would you say, when you say you have different migraines, are you actually able to classify them as to location, or how would you break them down? Or maybe we should back up and just say, how many different types of migraines have you identified?
Well, that's not, I should say my triggers.
Okay.
The triggers, what triggers my migraine. And sometimes my migraines, if I follow a specific protocol, I can, what I call, arrest them. Mm-hmm. And other times I get what I term as a runaway migraine, and it causes the entire left side of my head to become super sensitive. Mm. And the only way to alleviate that is to go to clinic and have an IV, and which Dr. Wilson prescribes. And I call them her magic potion.
Love you, IV magnesium.
You never know what you're going to receive, but it always works.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good to know that there is that that fail-safe mechanism available to you in those extreme cases. So,
yes.
You'd like to comment on any of this so far?
Yeah, well, I think, Betsy is so well-versed and so educated, and that's the way I like my patients to
Absolutely.
Be, to know what's going on with them and what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing. But, yes, there are many different kinds of migraine, and Betsy does have a combination of those and also different manifestations of migraine. Sometimes they can affect the sinuses and mislead people into thinking they have a sinus problem when it's part of the migraine. Can be associated with neck pain, and people may think the pain in the head is due to bulging discs, which it's not related to that. And then there, of course, the main differentiation is migraine with aura and migraine without aura. Mm-hmm. So then there is ocular migraine, there is ophthalmopathic.
Would you please define aura for our listeners that are not familiar with that term?
The aura is very important to be familiar with, because it could be what we call a red flag. The aura associated with migraine is a transient neurological dysfunction. Most of the time is visual, but the key to make it a migraine aura is that it begins very gradually, little by little, and then it progresses to reach a climax in about 15, 20 minutes, and then it dissipates also gradually, lasting about 20 to 25 minutes. Most of the time is a visual aura. In other words, it's associated with either what we call positive or negative phenomenon. It's either a C-shape, peripherally positive, bright zigzag lines, and inside dimming of light and what we call scotoma, decreased vision. Or it could also be sensory in that you may get numbness in the hand as well as in around the mouth. And those two are the most common kinds of aura. The most important thing that distinguishes a migraine aura from other forms of neurological dysfunction is the fact that it begins very gradually, reaches that maximum, and it dissipates gradually, and it never ever lasts more than an hour, either before the pain or with the pain, but never more than an hour. When it does, that's a red flag. It may not be a migraine with aura. It's something that we as physicians take very seriously.
So that's an excellent description. Thank you so much. So trying to summarize, if the aura or the neurologic phenomena occur beyond the resolution of the pain of the headache, then that could be a problem. That could be, for example, a stroke. For example,
that's what it used to be called, complicated migraine. Okay. And that's a situation where we investigate and look for possible causes of stroke, whether the patient has a tendency to form clots, what's going on, because it's not typical. We always investigate the atypical.
Okay, good. Betsy, you have any questions as we're reviewing this information?
No.
Okay. All right. Have you had an aura with your migraines, Betsy?
No, okay. I have not.
Okay. It was interesting to me, Maria, you mentioned that a patient can have different types of presentations of migraines, suggesting that the different parts of the brain can be sensitized at different times.
Yes.
Or maybe different triggers can generate a different location of the brain to be sensitive.
Actually, I look for that in migraine. That is very migraine-like. It's very reassuring, mm-hmm. because the fact that, well, one attack, my right side hurts, then it's the left, then it's the whole head, then it's mainly in the neck. I like to see that pattern because that is what migraine does. Mm-hmm. There are almost no two attacks exactly alike. While if you have an underlying pathology, mm-hmm. you're more likely to have the strict unilaterality, the more reproducible right. type of pain in the same exact place. And we look for that. So there's a lot of heterogeneity within the patient. Intrapatient, not all the attacks are the same. And mm-hmm. amongst patients, right. this is why it's a syndrome. It's mm-hmm. not the same for everybody. And even within the same patient, the characteristics may be different. Not all of them are associated with vomiting. Sometimes mm-hmm. may be more associated with neck pain. Sometimes it's more sharp pain in the eye, and so on and so forth.
Can it be, in some cases, can it be challenging to differentiate this from multiple sclerosis?
No, not at all.
Without an aura?
No. The ocular or the retinal migraine, which is the visual manifestation without the pain, that's another red flag in that. That's when we really have to investigate. And in that case, you bring up a very good point. Is this optic neuritis or is this something associated with the MS? But for the most part, no, because of the loss of vision is transient mm-hmm. and it only lasts up to an hour. It doesn't last as long as typically would in MS.
And how about the other, let's say there's no aura, let's just say there's varying neurologic deficits. You mentioned the numbness, for example. And numbness can be different locations on different times.
The numbness for the aura is typically in the arm, and what makes it migraine is to elaborate. It begins in the fingertips, and it ascends and progresses gradually to the elbow, rarely above the elbow. Again, I'm always looking for that information. Okay. Rarely above the elbow, and simultaneously, the area around the mouth is involved. Mm. That's why we call it chiro. Oral, chiro for hand, oral for mouth, because that is the distribution of those sensory fibers in mm-hmm. the brain, in the homunculus. Mm-hmm. That's why it's in that distribution. Right. But on the other hand, if we have weakness, motor weakness, mm. can happen in migraine, but not as often. So that's another thing that kind of would worry me that I would want to investigate. Because am I dealing with a rare form of migraine like hemiplegic migraine? Is this not migraine? And am I dealing with a stroke-like situation? Mm-hmm. And those are things that are also considered red flags.
Very good. All right. Betsy, I want to thank you again for your participation today, and thank you for sharing your history. It was very helpful, I'm sure, to our listeners that are trying to deal with their own migraine and headache problems.
Well, I thank you, and I especially want to thank you for having Dr. Wilson on your show. Before Dr. Wilson, I had 7 neurologists and had spent $35,000 trying to relieve my migraines, and so I think she's an example of a physician who offers hope in the midst of suffering, and we appreciate your having her for other people.
Well, Betsy, you put your finger on something that is very near and dear to my heart, and that is the difficulty today more than ever, and it's only going to get worse, to identify the where to get help for your medical problem. It's only going to get worse, and which is why one of the reasons why Focus on Females is here, to help provide credible information from experts in medicine and physicians. So, again, thank you for your comments. We appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, and you picked the best in the United States, so I admire your research ability.
Thank you, Betsy. Have a great day.
Thank you,
Betsy. Take care. Have a great day.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
And we'll be back with more with the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. It's migraines and headaches. Call with your questions now. Thank you.
Hi, this is Hugh Hewitt. When it comes to sounding the alarms about President Obama and his agenda, no one does it better than my friend Sean Hannity. Sean has just finished his first new book in 6 years. It's called Conservative Victory. It's a stirring call to action for every conservative. And when you subscribe to Town Hall Magazine, you can get Sean Hannity's new book as your free gift. The Town Hall Magazine is loaded with must-read stories about the conservative renaissance in America every single month. To get yours, log on to townhallmagazine.com. That's townhallmagazine.com.
The Tampa Bay Rays are back on the field, and as they kick off a brand new season, you can show your support at the St. Petersburg Area Chamber of Commerce Rays Luncheon Wednesday, April 28th at the USF St. Pete campus. Get the opportunity to meet players, coaches, and management, and hear the latest on the 2010 season. Individual reservations are just $39, and corporate table sponsorships are available. For reservations and details, go to stpete.com. That's stpete.com.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Health Care Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600.
Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin. Focus on
Females. Okay, welcome back. And now's the time to call with your questions as we enter the last 10 minutes of today's program. The phone number in Hillsborough County is 289-1860, 289-1860. And everywhere else outside of the county, it's 877, that's toll-free, 877-969-8600. And again, we do stream online for those of you that are interested in doing that in the future. So, Maria, tell me, can you have a migraine without any pain at all?
Yes, that is called acephalgic migraine. And that's when you have typically the visual disturbance and it is not followed by pain. The diagnosis of migraine without pain is always by exclusion. That's a situation where we don't have a test to know for sure that that was migraine. We go by previous history of migraine, family history of migraine, but we don't know for sure until we do our investigations and we rule out other conditions.
Okay. And how about, let's move on to the medications. We touched on some medications before, the triptans and so forth. How about Botox? People talk about using Botox for a number of things aside from the cosmetic. What's the experience with Botox and migraines?
The experience, most of it is clinical experience, and there have been many studies, unfortunately, under the rigors of double-blind placebo control situation, they have not been positive until recently. But recently, there were two studies that perhaps may lead to botulinum toxin to be approved for preventive treatment of headache. Of notice for our audience, we do not have any FDA-approved medication for chronic migraine. We only have four agents approved for episodic migraine. Two are beta blockers, propranolol and timolol, and two are neuromodulators, anti-epileptic drugs, Topamax and Depakote. Nothing so far has been approved for chronic headaches. Not that we don't have anything to choose from. We use a lot of things for prevention, but nothing really has the indication as of yet. Botox perhaps will have it. My clinical experience is that it's very, very effective and it's something that patients don't have to think about taking it because it's an injection treatment that is repeated every 3 months.
Do you think that there's a possibility that it might be a therapy for the chronic migraine?
I do, and I've seen it in my clinic. I have a lot of people that have gone into remission with botulinum toxin treatment, and my challenge is to get them off that. They want the injections because they're finally doing well. But I say, well, if you're doing well, that may mean you don't need it. So.
And I imagine that the Botox would also nicely treat the tension component. If the migraineur has also a tension headache component as well.
It does, but the reason why Botox works for migraine is not believed that it's because it relaxes the muscles, but because the toxin not only binds to motor neurons that relax the muscle, but the toxin binds to sensory neurons that transmit pain. And it also binds to cholinergic neurons, and it's also used for people that have excessive sweating.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting product. It's not just that it relaxes the muscles, but it also binds to sensory neurons. And in fact, they're developing therapeutics that don't have the motor paralysis or the motor weakness component to that, and it's purely sensory. But clearly, probably works because it prevents propagation of pain transmission.
So it sounds like a nice general neuromodulator.
Absolutely. It sounds, it's felt to stop and block peripheral neurogenic inflammation.
Okay. On the line is Sherry, and Sherry is a patient of Dr. Wilson's. Sherry, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you.
And you have a history of headaches. Is that so?
Yes.
Okay.
Long history of having headaches and migraines.
And migraines. Okay. Would you be kind enough to let us know when they began and roughly how old are you now?
Okay. I am right now 56 years old.
Okay.
And they began, I would say, probably in my early 30s, late 20s.
Okay.
And when I began having headaches, there wasn't a lot of products out that there are today, treatments.
Right.
And so it was basically sometimes suffering and just using over-the-counter medications.
Tell us, if you would, if you remember, or what it was like in the very early days when you had your first migraines, how you, you know, what, if you would characterize them, and how you found out that indeed this was a migraine you were experiencing.
The first migraines were like sharp pains on the side of my temple.
Sharp
like
pains.
Ice pick, yes.
Okay, like an ice pick. Okay.
Like an ice pick feeling, and it would kind of only go away if I laid down, and but it would continue to linger for several days. And again, at the time there was only over-the-counter medication I would take, and then in time, you know, due time, they would finally go away.
Let me ask you before you go any further, did you have an aura with these sharp pains?
I had an aura a while back, I'm probably going to say, not when they first started, but my first aura really happened without a migraine following it. It was just the aura, and I didn't know at first what that was.
So you had... You had these migraines, and I assume that before the aura began, which was relatively later on, you knew that these sharp ice pick pains lasted for days were a migraine. You knew that, and then later on you developed an aura only with a so-called acephalic migraine without, in other words, the aura without the pain. Is that correct?
Right. And the first one only lasted about maybe 5 minutes, but there was never a headache that follows, a migraine that follows. And then later on, they would last a little longer, and then a headache would develop after them.
I see. And so how were you being managed at that time?
Basically, I tried to manage with different triptans and all to see if we could get it under control. I tried the... Also, just different products, and nothing really could kind of handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them worked, some of them didn't, but it was kind of like a short fix. It would, the next time another headache would come around, that product might not work on that one.
And when did you see Dr. Wilson for this problem?
I saw Dr. Wilson approximately 9 years ago when I first moved here to Florida, and she has basically been the only one that's been able to treat me and have them under control for me
my
life.
And what was she using for you to control them?
We had tried the Topamax, but I had the after effects were really bad, and so some of the triptans worked a little bit better. The new ones coming out, and. And now we just handle it on a per-case basis. Sometimes I have to go in for IV, the IV outpatient therapy.
Let's do this because you only have a couple minutes left. Maria, would you go over the IV therapy that seems to be so effective for these patients?
Yes. The IV therapy consists of infusions of medication which are tailored to every patient. And they may range from DHE, which is dihydroergotamine. That's another migraine-specific medication, which, by the way, is available as well in nasal spray. But they can also, magnesium, I almost give magnesium to everybody. We might use neuromodulators, including IV Depakon, IV Keppra. We might use chlorpromazine IV. We use steroids. We use sometimes even IV lidocaine. We have a lot of things that we use. We also use a very potent muscle relaxant, orphenadrine. So in anti-nausea medications, either Zofran or Compazine are also effective. Sometimes other dopamine blockers like droperidol. We have about 10 different things. And depending upon the medical history of the patient, the headache characteristic, what they have been using prior to coming to the clinic, that's when we decide which is the best combination for each patient. And we try to avoid opioids at all costs because
it's dependent.
Exactly. But as a last resort, we might use it, but we don't see that as a first line, but last resort.
Perfect. Sherry, we only have a short time. We thank you for your participation. Do you have any quick question or comment before we have to close the show?
No, it's just that people who have migraines, please, go to a specialist, get them diagnosed, and, there is life.
Okay.
You can't lead on without having that pain.
Thank you, and thank you to Dr. Maria Carmen Wilson for joining me today on migraines and headaches. We'll have to do a follow-up show on this. In the meantime, I'd like to thank each and every one of you listening today. for your participation, for listening and learning about this topic. And next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we're covering C. difficile colitis, deadly C. difficile colitis, why we must not overuse antibiotics. And my guest expert is Dr. Jürgen Nord, gastroenterologist from USF College of Medicine.